You are listening to Podcasters of Horror, a podcast about exploring horror anthologies from film and TV, as part of the Super Network, with your hosts, Super Marcy.
And he just gave off, like, very creepy vibes, so you're always very unsure of this guy.
And the terrible Australian, Beat Germine.
Which, in that version, it's a Krusty the Clown doll that's harassing Homer.
This podcast may contain coarse language.
It just kept getting weirder and weirder, and it's, what the f*** is up with this house?
Adult themes.
You know, she's only just a little girl, but he really is very mean to her.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. For more information, please visit supermarcy.com or see the show notes. To show your support, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Please enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Podcasters of Horror, the horror anthology podcast, hosted by me, Super Marcy. Thank you for joining us. And, of course, I'm with my co-host, Bede Jermaine. Hello, Bede. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
Doing well. Excited to be diving into more of the Twilighty Zone thingy. As for this episode, we are back in the Twilight Zone.
Mention not only of sight and sound, but mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are only that of the imagination. You're entering the Twilight Zone.
And back in the 2000s era Twilight Zone as well.
Now, I know, Marcy, we covered our first ever episode from the 2000s incarnation of the show on the previous Twilight Zone discussion we've done for Podcasters of Horror with the sequel to It's a Good Life, It's Still a Good Life. So I'm very curious to kind of go into these two episodes from that revival. And yeah, I think we picked two really good ones, including one that's actually a remake of an episode that we've already covered on this show.
Yeah, so for this one, we are looking at the episodes Mr. Motivation and The Monsters Are on Maple Street. So if you recall, on a previous podcaster's episode discussing the Twilight Zone, we discussed The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. Wait. What's the right title? The Monsters Are on Maple Street or Due on Maple Street?
I think the original episode was called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, but the remake episode is just called The Monsters on Maple Street. And honestly, I feel like they kind of changed that because it's almost like a Mandela effect. I think people just keep calling the original episode The Monsters Are on Maple Street rather than Due on Maple Street.
Yeah.
Because even I think even on that episode, I may have mucked up the title.
Yeah,
as
I was
well.
Looking a little confused. I'm like, but there was a Jew in there somewhere. But yeah, you're probably right. It's the original one is The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. I guess that's a way to tell the difference, where the monsters are just on Maple Street in the remake. Maybe, we don't know. We'll find out. And yeah, I mean, obviously the inspiration for picking these ones is to have a look at another remake. And if you go back to a previous episode, we discussed a remake from the original series with the After Hours. So we do like checking out the remakes or redos when they are there. And as for Mr. Motivation, it's got a talking doll and we love covering that. So that's pretty much the inspiration to it. So, Bede, are you ready?
Indeed, I'm ready. Let's do this, Marcy.
All right. First up is Mr. Motivation.
I knew it. Should have called in sick today.
Today's the day.
I need a little more motivation than that.
What you need is an attitude adjustment.
You think?
I don't think. I know.
This was episode 18 of the 2002-2003 Twilight Zone series. The teleplay was by Brent Friedman, with a story by Steve Aspis, directed by Darren Serafian. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. This stars Wallace Langham, Christopher McDonald, Helen Joy, with Pat O'Brien as the voice of Mr. Motivation, hosted by Forrest Whitaker. Plot summary. A strange talking doll received as a birthday present encourages a timid man to stand up to his overbearing boss. The opening narration. Charlie Stickney has never had quite enough confidence to stand up for himself. But today is different. Today is a day of reckoning, a test of character, a battle of wills. Thanks to a very unusual toy made in the Twilight Zone. I will start with me, because I think I pick on Beat a lot on this show. So, yeah, I basically saw this one and thought, oh, okay, it's another, like, talking doll episode. And I've actually seen both of the episodes we're discussing before, as I used to watch this incarnation of the Twilight Zone when it was on at like midnight or something on TV. So there are a number of episodes I've seen, but I don't remember which they are. So as I watch them, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I've seen this one. So I do remember watching this one. I don't remember much of it. This is, I really liked this episode because it is kind of insane. So the main character of Charlie, played by Wallace Langham, is given like this talking bobblehead by his boss, played by Christopher McDonald, who he's just so good at naturally playing a dickhead.
Yeah.
As you bop like the bobblehead, it will say a phrase. It's meant to motivate you. But as this kind of goes on, as he's tapping Mr. Motivation, he just starts talking and saying a lot of different things. And soon enough, he's pretty much like wishing the boss dead, and he wants to help Charlie, you know, not be so quiet and stand up for himself. So it's a very bizarre episode, but it's quite a fun one. Just the interactions between Wallace Langham and Christopher McDonald are so good. But I think just with Mr. Motivation just coming up with these one-liners is also pretty good. But the ending, I like the ending, but I also have issues with it. So we will get to that very soon. But I am quite the fan of this episode. I actually really enjoyed this. Pete.
Yeah, I have to agree as well. I think it's a really fun episode. And I think out of all the episodes we've done for this podcast in regards to the Twilight Zone, I think this is definitely one of our more comical episodes, because it is going for full-blown comedy more than scares or sci-fi or anything like that. So I was very curious, because I don't think I did watch this episode when it was first released. I do remember watching some episodes of the Twilight Zone 2000s back in the day, but this one I don't think I did see. So I was kind of curious to sit down and watch this one, but I agree. I think it is a really fun episode. I think the performances are all pretty strong. Wallace Langham is really good as Charlie, but yeah, as you sort of stated before, Christopher McDonald knows how to play a dick so well. And I mean, I think he's pretty much played this type of character in his entire career, but it still works regardless.
Yeah, he just does it so well.
And he's a lot of fun here, and I think Pat O'Brien is great as the voice of Mr. Motivation, and I like how, in a way, it's kind of a strangely inspirational episode, because it is literally about this doll motivating Charlie to kind of stick up for himself and all that. But it kind of does get to points where, like, Mr. Motivation's techniques are definitely questionable, but it actually does work, and it even goes full-blown batshit insane at the last half.
And there's even a love story thrown in for good measure. What made me laugh is, like, he's talking to, I forgot the character's name, but the lady from HR that he likes, and she turns around and then Mr. Motivation's like, nice buns.
Hey, nice buns.
And that interaction causes them to organize a date.
Definitely. And also there's a bit of an interesting kind of like themes the episode explores, because Charlie's boss like they find out that they need to recall. I believe it's birth control pills because they may not be 100% working, but his boss doesn't want to do that because it will, you know, cost a lot of money. And of course it kind of deals with that type of subject matter while Wallace is doing all this other stuff. And it actually kind of ties it all together really well.
Yeah, it's because we know that Charlie has a conscience. So knowing that his boss is doing these shitty things really amps it up. But you can also look at Mr. Motivation as being kind of your inner voice and actually listening to your inner voice who's trying to encourage you. I think for me, what kind of lets it down is a bit to do with the ending. Charlie ends up, like, I guess, taking over the company or being in a better position, but he then treats his employers the way that Christopher McDonald seemed to be treating him. And I feel like it should have been a lesson learned not to do that. But that's really my only issue with it. I think it's a good ending for Charlie to have a better position, to be more confident and to kind of, you know, do that. But I don't like the fact that he's just gone and turned into an asshole, apparently.
Well, to be fair, though, on that part, I thought the exact same way as well. Like, he's kind of treating one of the, I guess, the guy who's taken over his job pretty shabbily. But then once he goes in his office, basically Mr. Motivation says something to him, and then that's when he calls that worker and apologizes for yelling at him and him doing a good job. So in a way, you can say Mr. Motivation is making sure
he's still trying to keep him in line.
Yeah,
but I feel like in that moment he's just too much of an asshole.
Yeah, especially in quick succession. About,
yeah,
it's like literally this whole episode takes course over the course of a few days.
Yeah, it just felt weird that he's just gonna be like such an asshole after going through all that. You feel like Mr. Motivation shouldn't be telling him to be a good person to his workers at this point. So I think that's kind of my only issue with it, but I actually really liked this episode. I appreciate something that's more comedic, but it kind of has something to say, which I like.
Agreed. I think that's just what works about it. And I couldn't see this type of scenario play out in a more, I guess, dramatic story. So I think having it as a comedy definitely really helps it.
Yeah, it's got the right tone. It's the comedy, I think, really works. And again, we've mentioned the performances are all really good. It just comes together really, really well. And I think it's just one of, I think, my favorites just for the fact it is funny.
It also kind of blows my mind too, Marcy, that the director of this episode, Darren Sarafian, and if I butchered your name, please forgive me, Marcy, previously he directed Death Warrant starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Damn straight.
And he also directed Gunman with Christopher Lambert and Mario Van Peebles.
That's not a classic.
And also Terminal Velocity with Charlie Sheen.
I don't know if that's a classic, though.
But since then, he's, like, directed a lot of TV shows, so.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty fun episode, I have to say. Final thoughts and rating. I'm giving Mr. Motivation 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed it. Just a little bit iffy on that one little bit towards the end with Charlie just ending up being a dickhead and needing to still be put in place by Mr. Motivation. But other than that, I think it's really solid. I honestly recommend people check it out.
I would say it's about 3.5 out of 5 for me. Like, I think it is a really solid and enjoyable episode. Definitely a bit more lightweight compared to other episodes we have discussed on this show. But it is an enjoyable one, and it is entertaining. And yeah, I had a really good time with this one.
And the closing narration. By listening to that little voice, Charlie Stickney won the battle of the wills with his boss and with himself. Another success story courtesy of The Twilight Zone. And I question that because I'm not sure there was many success stories in The Twilight Zone on most of the episodes.
Agreed.
And on to The Monsters Are on Maple Street.
Yeah, the new family at the end of the street, that fence they built.
A chain link fence.
Well, it's unsightly. and unfriendly.
Yeah, well, that family's a weird bunch. Did you guys notice they were the only ones on the block that did not fly a flag on Veterans Day?
They just moved in, Dylan. Maybe they hadn't unpacked their flag yet.
Come on, Will. There were plenty of flags on sale down at Home Depot. They could have picked one up.
And this is episode 31 from the 2002-2003 Twilight Zone series. The teleplay was by Aaron Maher and Kay Reindel. And apologies again if I pronounced anything poorly. It was directed by Debbie Allen, and it stars Andrew McCarthy, Titus Welliver, Christy Angus, with Forest Whitaker as the host. And as mentioned, it is a remake of this episode of the same name, sort of, from the original series. And the plot summary: the residents of a suburban street spiral into madness when the neighborhood loses power and everyone suspects a terrorist attack is imminent. The opening narration: Maple Street, USA, a suburban community on a pleasant Saturday afternoon. But in a few moments, everything will change for the residents of Maple Street as they discover that the monsters they fear may already be among them. And as mentioned, you can go back and check out our thoughts on the original series episode. And Beat, I'll pick on you this time. As mentioned, this was an episode that we'd both seen previously. And I think we've had, because we covered the original episode, we can kind of have more of a, I guess, comparison now that we've seen both kind of close together. But tell us your thoughts.
Well, before I go into my thoughts, Marcy, I forgot to bring this up earlier. Like, I'm kind of still reeling from the Twilight Zone theme for the 2000s version, which was redone by Jonathan Davis of Korn.
It's the most 2000s sounding like redo theme song, but it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I just had a lot of nostalgia like for the early 2000s, because how heavy metal and nu metal was just so huge at the time. So I was just caught off guard at just how early 2000s the opening theme was.
Indeed.
But in terms of this episode, now this one I was very much looking forward to discussing for the show, because I do remember seeing this episode when it did air on TV. So I do remember it quite well. After watching the original and then watching this version, I got to say, Marcy, I think this is actually a great update of the original episode. And what's great about it, though, is because with the original episode, that episode could be seen as a metaphor about the Cold War and also the Red Scare as well. But this episode, you can definitely tell that this episode was very influenced by post 9/11 paranoia, because this episode came out in February 2003, so basically over 16 months after 9/11, which I believe was definitely in the minds of the makers behind this version of the show. Because just watching it, like, they do make a lot of changes to the original for this one, where basically like the entire neighborhood is becoming very paranoid of each other. But in this one, the neighbors start becoming very paranoid of the new family that has come into town. Because again, like the original episode, it begins where all the power is gone. None of the cars and phones are working. Everyone's trying to figure out what is going on. But the new family in town, and their power is still running, and their car is still working. But even before that even happens, some of the people in this neighborhood, particularly Titus Welliver's character, who's a complete dickhead in this episode. I mean, he's great in the role, but his character's a complete dickhead.
You take the Christopher McDonald character, like, and this one, they're pure dickheads, but like in the opposites of ways, but still kind of the same.
Like, you can tell, like, even before the shit hits the fan, this character definitely already has prejudices about a lot of people, including the neighbors. And you can definitely tell, like, even in this sort of, like, little meeting that the town that this neighborhood, like this neighborhood meeting that they're having, they're talking about like what they're going to be doing for the upcoming Christmas season. And like a lot of them say, oh, you, depending which holiday you celebrate, you can do it this way. But then one of the neighbors thinks, oh, maybe we should all just have the exact same thing. So already this episode is kind of establishing like, if everyone is the same, everyone's in perfect harmony. But of course, the new neighbors in town, they don't have any of that stuff on their house. They have like this kind of chain fence around their yard when everyone has wide open front yards. And so they find that suspicious. But then once everything hits the fan, they just think like, oh, whatever is happening is because of these people.
Yeah.
And we never see the family in that house, but they keep referring to, like, throughout the whole episode, they keep thinking like, oh, the terrorists are attacking. Like, and they just assume that the people in that house are terrorists. And obviously you have Andrew McCarthy's character who's kind of being the voice of reason. And he, what makes his character interesting too is his relationship with his wife. I guess I'm assuming his wife must have previously lived in this neighborhood because they have a discussion about them moving there. And he says, like, I moved here because of you. So obviously, like, she's more, he's kind of the outsider in this neighborhood. And then, so he automatically is empathizing with the new neighbors because he knows what it's like. And he's trying to stop everyone from going insane. And then it kind of just escalates from there. So it is a very intense episode, but how it sort of updates certain elements from the original episode is just really interesting and makes it very timely, at least at the time for that episode.
Yeah. With the original episode and that paranoia being around the time of like the Cold War and as you said, the Red Scare and stuff, and then doing this story again, but being in that post 9/11 paranoia actually makes a lot of sense. And with the changes they made, that also makes sense. The fact that they kind of target family they don't know in the neighborhood and just make assumptions when there could be many other explanations for what's going on. It's pretty much just the stuff that ended up happening. And I'm sure you could update this episode today and it could be a metaphor for many different things. But yeah, like the fact we don't see this family, so it leaves them more mysterious. But if you kind of know what the story is, you're not that suspicious of them, I think. But it also is kind of like you get where the paranoia is coming from, because why is no one else's power working? Why is no one's cars working yet? Theirs seem to be in working order. Stuff like that to just amps up the paranoia. When it gets to the point where then they start finding hidden cameras around the place, it's like, oh, well, it must be them. So they basically firebomb the house. And that's where our twist comes in. And it is similar to the twist of the original with more of a, I guess, modern update, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like in the original episode, it's they kind of established like what is going on, and one of the kids in the neighborhood says, oh, it could be aliens, and everyone kind of shrugs it off. But then we find out like how, why everything is going down is because it was in fact aliens. And what they're doing is, what we could easily do is, instead of just taking over the planet, why don't we just incite violence in these small little communities, and they just basically will take themselves out, and we don't, and we could just sit back and watch. But in this one though, this ending, like, it updates that and makes it even more insidious by by making it that it's actually the government and the military doing experiments on this neighborhood to see how people would react in a terrorist event. Like, would they band together or would they turn against each other? And of course we kind of find out like the experiment has kind of failed. But then again, I guess in a way they kind of see it as like, oh, well, if they're inflicting violence on each other, I guess they can fight back against anything else that comes their way. So it's a very interesting ending, especially what was going on in the world at the time politically. So it actually does work very well, is like kind of mixing it up from aliens to all of this being a sort of government experiment.
Yeah, the fact that it's like an experiment to see how people react to certain terrorist situations, and the fact that like this descended in just hours because we forgot to turn the power off for one family. So that family had nothing to do with it. It was a simple mistake that they ended up being targeted. Mm. And again, like that original episode, this episode says a lot about human nature and the human condition. What happens with mass hysteria and not having rational thinking and jumping to conclusions? And it's a thought-provoking one. It, again, I think it's actually a really interesting redo for something, updating it for the time it was made and having something to say, which I think the original did as well. And I think it's executed really well. And I like that how it's just set in this neighborhood and we clearly see how this house stands out. But then when we know why, pretty much because they didn't turn off the power. If they turned off the power, I don't know if they would have targeted the new family because there wouldn't have been that much to suspect them over. And again, with all that said, I think the performances are great. I like Titus Welliver's asshole character. I wanted to bitch slap him a bunch of times, but I think that's the point. And I like that Andrew McCarthy played sort of that voice of reason. And I think there was a lot of just genuineness in that performance as well. It's incredible what you can achieve in like 20 minutes for a TV show.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And to me, this is the type of story, and you alluded to this before, that you could just bring this story back every couple of years or every few decades and it'll still be relevant. In a way, this episode could be similar to like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like, no matter whenever you update that story, it can easily fit within the time in which it takes place, because you could easily add any kind of social commentary on it and it would still make that story relevant. And it really does work here. And I think if you did that story again today, given what is going on in our world at the moment, it would be very easy to update the story.
Yeah, you could put anything in its place. And I think that's the power of a story like this. And also what makes it sad is it's that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Mm.
Whereas we can keep telling this story because nothing changes. People fundamentally don't change. And I'd honestly be curious if someone took this story in a modern setting, how that would play out. But for this episode, we covered two very different episodes, but I think they're both very much worth watching. And I think that just shows with each iteration of the Twilight Zone, just what sort of different episodes you can get. I don't know if people dismiss this one because it only had the one season with 40 or 50 episodes or so.
Mm.
But, you know, rewatching some of the episodes, and I'm sure we'll get to more as well, it's really an underrated show. And they had some really good casts because of the three episodes from this iteration we've discussed. With the other episode we did where they brought cast back from the original show, but then also the cast they've used for these two, like, it's very impressive.
I'm definitely curious to kind of see more episodes from the 2000s version. There's one episode in particular that you and I have talked about before and that I remember vividly watching, and I hope we do an episode on it at some point. But yeah, I think it'd be interesting kind of diving into more episodes from this revival of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I've really enjoyed, for different reasons, even if I didn't particularly like episodes, just having a look at what the different iterations give us. And yeah, it'll be interesting to go to the more modern iteration as well in the future. But yeah, final thoughts and rating, Beat.
I'm going to give this one a 4.5 out of 5. Like, it's definitely not subtle, but it still works in terms of the themes that it is exploring within the story. And I think the performances are all strong. And I just think it's just a great update of the classic episode. And it takes the premise and does something interesting with it to make it, at least at the time when it was aired, very relevant and timely.
Mm. Yeah, I give this one a 4.5 out of 5 as well. I think it's a very strong episode. It's a strong like remake and update for the story. And again, it's something that we can keep telling because people just don't change. And again, another episode I'd really recommend, especially if you've seen that one from the original show and haven't seen this one, it's interesting to see how they updated it. And for our closing narration, it isn't enough for a sole voice of reason to exist. In this time of uncertainty, we're so sure that villains lurk around every corner that we will create them ourselves if we can't find them. For while fear may keep us vigilant, it's also fear that tears us apart. A fear that sadly exists only too often outside the Twilight Zone. You could say those closing lines at any point in time and they resonate. And again, it just goes with people don't change.
Exactly.
With that said, that brings our episode to a close. That was an interesting discussion on two very different episodes. And if you want to find out more about Podcasters of Horror or the Super Network, head to supermarcy.com or go to the show notes on the website for this episode. You can find links for everything, and you can find Podcasters of Horror on all your major podcast streaming platforms, such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you want to find me, I am available at Super Marcy on the social media, and I'm Super_Marcy on Letterboxd. And don't forget to like and subscribe and all that stuff with Podcasters of Horror so you don't miss any episodes, or you can catch up on other ones. Speed.
Well, if people want to find me out there on the internet, you can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd under Bede Chabide. You can find all my work and as well as all the awesome podcasts that you and I host together, Marcy, on supermarcy.com and as everywhere on podcast streamers everywhere via the Super Network podcast feed. And also you can listen to my solo show, Bede vs. the Living Dead, and as well as its little spin-offs as part of the Bede vs. the Living Dead network on all podcast streamers everywhere, either via the Bede vs. the Living Dead podcast feed or on each show's individual solo podcast feed.
Awesome. Be sure to check all that out. And we will be back hopefully very soon with another episode of Podcasters of Horror. And absolutely let us know if there are certain episodes from any iteration of the Twilight Zone you'd like to see us cover. And with that said, catch you later, everybody.
See you, everybody. Bye.